Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, starting with last night's game. You know, if you want to complain about last night's game, you can. There are plenty of reasons you might do so, starting with, as I mentioned, the length of that game. I mean, holy crap, that was a long game. I was not convinced that that game was going to end in time for me to host this show this morning. That was a long, long game. On top of that, it's not like it was the best officiating I've ever seen either. But then again, it feels like a lot of these games come with that very warning these days. However, I am not here to complain about that. I am here to say this: LSU 42, Clemson 25. I'm also here to say this: Edward James Orgeron Jr., also known as Coach O, is now a national champion. The guy who took the field for the national championship game with a cut on his forehead, a cut that he received while punching himself after a practice to get his guys fired up, is the new king of college football. And personally, I find that awesome, because what he and his team, and in particular Joe Burrow, did to Clemson was impressive as hell. What they did to Clemson is what they've done to everybody all year long. They're the first team to beat the top four teams in the AP preseason poll in the same season, and they not only did it, but they did it by 21 points on average per game. Except last night, that's not how it looked. It didn't look like that was going to happen, because in the first quarter, Clemson hit the ground running. They came out like their hair was on fire. Clemson D coordinator Brent Venables was coaching his ass off and throwing all sorts of looks at Burrow that seemed to have him pretty confused. Isaiah Simmons was everywhere, and the Tigers in orange had the Tigers in white back on their heels. There was the Trevor Lawrence run that gave Clemson a 7-0 lead.
Lawrence, a shotgun snap, keeps it himself, goes right side in the end zone. Touchdown, Trevor Lawrence.
Clemson Tigers Network on the call. Then you had the T. Higgins reverse that improved their lead to 17-7.
Handoff Dixon on the end around, though. He'll flip it to T. Higgins. He's got blocking outside the numbers, left side. 40, 25, 20, 15, inside the 10, the 5, yeah. Into the end zone. Did he step out of bounds? No. Touchdown. Higgins scores.
That's how you finish a run. You lower that shoulder and you finish the run. That was ridiculous. A guy who simply refused to go down. And for a moment, it looked like Clemson might just run away with that game. And for all the hype about LSU's coaching and Joe Brady, Clemson was coaching circles around them early on. Early on, that ACC speed looked a little bit faster than the SEC speed. Except Clemson was not quite able to capitalize as much as you have to capitalize in those situations. Because in between the first two Clemson TDs was this from Joe Burrow.
Burrow, play action. Throws deep down the near side looking for Ja'Marr Chase. Caught at the 15-yard line. He will waltz into the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers! 52-yard touchdown strike.
LSU Sports Network with that call. You see, Joe Burrow is going to get his own take later on. He deserves it after last night. He deserves it before last night. But that right there was a taste of what was still to come. Burrow got his feet underneath him. He let it rip. And when he has a chance to let it go, Clemson's defense. Now check that. Any college defense is in trouble. Serious trouble. That's exactly where Clemson found themselves. Stuck between Burrow and LSU's offense at their best, and then their own offense that struggled to convert on third downs. Like, if you're not picking up first downs and touchdowns against this LSU offense, you're not beating them. And Clemson was not beating LSU last night. The longer that game went, well, did anybody mention how long that game went? But the longer that game went, the more and more apparent it was LSU was just a better team. They weren't just a better team, they were the best team. Fell behind 17-7 and then rip off a 35-8 run. 15-0. 15 and Coach O. Like I said, Burrow gets his own take a little bit later on, but the fact is, Coach O is where he is right now, and it's amazing. It's tremendous. It's tremendous because this is somebody who has been overlooked, somebody who has been clowned, somebody who has been mocked, and somebody who has been laughed at for years. So don't come in here now saying how you love Coach O all along and that you always knew he'd win a national title, because pretty much nobody did. Just about everybody laughed at this guy, laughed at his accent, made fun of his voice, tried to do an impression of him, clowned him for how he looked, clowned him for how he sounded. And don't act like you didn't, because you did. So don't disrespect this guy or minimize what he accomplished by making it all about his voice or him punching himself or yelling at guys to stop making noise during his pressers. Do not disrespect him by saying, yeah, but. He's a hell of a motivator and a big energy guy, but not all that much of a head coach. Hey, believe this. This dude can coach now. This guy can coach. This guy can recruit. This guy can assemble a staff. This guy can fire up a fan base. This guy can do everything you want a head coach to do. And he can do all those things on an elite level. And yes, he can match you IQ for IQ. But he was this close to never getting that chance ever again. That's what's so tremendous about the whole thing. I mean, there weren't too many people saying that this guy was going to win a national title when he won three SEC games in three seasons at Ole Miss, and he got broken off. I mean, you want to say that he's the embodiment of a football coach, fine, say it now, but there were not that many people who hire football coaches who thought that. This is a guy who went 6-2 as the interim head coach at USC. He desperately wanted the USC job. He was so proud of that job. He loved that program. He loved that job, but USC thought they could do better. They were wrong. Pat Hayden was wrong. Part of the reason why Hayden's out of a job right now. But not getting that gig did leave Coach O in a pretty tough spot.
When I didn't get the job at USC, I said, hey, you know what? Hey, you might be an assistant the rest of your life.
He said, when I didn't get the job at USC, I said, hey, maybe you'll be an assistant the rest of your life. And he says, it was only a few years ago when he was just sitting on his couch.
I remember sitting on the sofa in my house. I had a year to reflect. I remember watching SEC games, and you know what? I know I can compete with these guys, given the right place.
And then he got the right place. But even that right place wasn't sure that he was the right guy. Remember, Les Miles brought him in to be the D-line coach in 2015. Then Coach O was the interim coach in 16 when Miles was fired. Coach O went, wait for it, 6-2 as the interim that year. And then he desperately wanted that job, like he desperately wanted the USC job. And wait for it, LSU did not give it to him immediately. They also thought they could do better. They went after guys who look, act, and sound more like a traditional head coach than Coach O. You know, the kinds of guys that he was kicking the hell out of this year. So they contacted other guys, and then finally they got around to making Ed their guy. Except it wasn't even clear that he was their guy, especially after they lost to Troy at home in his first full season. You think anybody was talking about Coach O in a national championship after that game? As an assistant coach told SI last night, quote, we lost to bleeping Troy 2 years ago. I was there, end quote. Think about that for a minute. They lost to bleeping Troy 2 years ago, and now they're the bleeping national champions. LSU just capped off one of the greatest seasons in college football history. I could make the argument that they might be one of the greatest college football teams of all time. And they lost to Troy 2 years ago. The fact that the team that lost to Troy 2 years ago and just beat Clemson last night might be the most ridiculous part of the entire thing. And the fact that Coach O is the head coach might be the best part. He said this after the game.
It was kind of funny. The things that I was doing at Ole Miss, I was ridiculed for. Now I punch myself in the jaw and everybody at LSU likes it. So it just depends where you're at, man.
Just does depend where you're at, man. It does depend where you're at. And right now, where he's at is the top of the college football world, looking down on everybody else, and he earned every bit of it. Bottom line, you cannot shtick your way to a national championship, but you can coach your way to one, and he did. Yes, this guy's a hell of a personality and a tremendous character, but he's a hell of a football coach too. Man, don't get that twisted. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Coach O.
Go Tigers.
Your national freaking championship head coach. Hey, clones, the question of the day. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? I can tell you what we don't want. We don't want another bar or another sugary snack or another energy drink. No, instead we want beef. pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled, it's not dry, it's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty, it's not tough. What makes it so good? I'm going to say it's the company behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat at its finest, and it goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Fred Warner is my guest. Fred, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
It's great. Good to be on. Thanks.
Good to have you. All right, so while a couple of teams, Fred, were coming off the bye and playing at home over the weekend, did not get off to strong starts. You guys, though, were locked in from the beginning against Minnesota. So what was the mindset among the players in the week building up to that game and then in the locker room right before kickoff?
Yeah, I mean, we knew we were playing a tough opponent in the Vikings. You know, they were hot coming off that win the week before, and we were coming off a bye week. And so, you know, sometimes teams can get lackadaisical off the bye, but I feel like we were so locked in throughout the week, preparing, you know, having that one goal in mind, which was to come out and play hard from the get-go and get that win.
You know, it seems pretty self-evident, but how different is the atmosphere and the intensity of a playoff game compared to the regular season? I mean, is it just another game, or do you notice a heightened level of fire and speed on the field?
Yeah, I mean, people probably think there's a huge difference, but I mean, to me, honestly, there wasn't much of a difference. I mean, yeah, there's for sure another level of focus, and the fans are a lot louder. Our fans have been great for us all season. I mean, we played in some tough games where it's come down to the wire, and you know, everything's on the line. But I think it felt like another game, honestly.
We're talking to Fred Warner. You mentioned that you knew what you were dealing with the Vikings. They'd gone into New Orleans. They'd beaten the Saints at home. You knew how good they were, except you held them to only 7 first downs and allowed only 147 yards total on offense. So how'd you go about shutting them down and locking them up the way you did?
Yeah, I think it all started with stopping the run. They've had an outstanding run game all season, you know, with Dalvin Cook, who's an outstanding back. I mean, I remember watching film on him throughout the week and being very impressed with how he ran the football. And so we all came out with that mindset that, you know, we're gonna out-physical them in the run game. And so once we shut that down, our big boys up front were able to go eat. And, you know, us in the back end just had to be sticky in coverage, and I think the results showed.
Yeah, that plan worked. He was held to the fewest carries of his career and the second fewest rushing yards of his career. And then when they did try to pass, your rush was getting home. You had a great line after the game, too, that you were in man coverage a lot on third down, so you'd be in coverage. Then all of a sudden you'd start hearing the cheering, and then the play was over before it even started. And so how much fun is that when the pass rush is getting home and all 11 guys on defense are feeding off each other the way they were?
Oh, man, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. And, yeah, it's funny because you know, like I said, we'll be in coverage, and then you hear the cheering, and it all of a sudden it's time to celebrate. You know, I start sprinting downfield to get to the linemen so we can mimic their celebrations. It's just fun. You know, on defense we like to keep it light, but you know, we're always locked in, so we can have those moments.
49ers and Packers in the NFC Championship game this weekend. Fred Warner joining us once again. You went into Saturday's game coming off that bye, so you had a chance to rest up, get rejuvenated. I mean, again, it seems self-evident, but how valuable is that this time of year? And did you notice a difference on the field?
Oh, it was extremely valuable. Just the fact that we were able to get back some of those key pieces, you know, Quan, Jaquaski Tart, and D4, those were guys that were talked about all week, but even getting our guys that who are already on the field, you know, that much more healthy and fresh heading into the game, I think it kind of showed on Saturday just how fresh we were able to, you know, run the ball even harder, you know, and just fly around. And so I think that was kind of overwhelming to the Vikings, and you know, we're looking forward to trying to replicate that this weekend.
Fred Warner, my guest. Fred, go back to Quan. Quan Alexander was back out there. What kind of a difference does he make for this defense?
It, it's kind of hard to describe how big of an impact he has. I mean, people are always going to try and look to the stat sheet to see how he performed in a game, but this was probably, I mean, this was one of his best games, honestly. I mean, the dude was constantly showing up in the film. You know, he's always flying to the football. His energy is so contagious out there. It gives me so much more confidence just with him being on the field with me. And I'm sure that's the feeling for everybody. And so, I mean, his leadership is really what you can't really put a price on. You know, I feel like that's my brother. So every time he's out there on the field, we all have this different swag about us.
Yeah, no, I can tell how much he means to you and how much he means to the team. And the fact is, you never want to be without a guy like Kwon Alexander. But at the same time, you personally did not take a step back. In fact, I'd argue you took a step forward when he was out. How much did you grow as a player while he was out?
Yeah, I think I for sure grew a lot during that time. You know, I think in the beginning of the season, with both of us out there, I was relying on him heavily, you know, just as a veteran presence out there. And he was off to a hot start, of course, too. But once he left, I think I just kind of had to dial in a little more. You know, I feel like I hadn't been playing up to my standard. And so I switched some things around just in my routine. So I was able to go out there and perform the way I knew I was capable. And then having Dre out there being as solid as he's been, I mean, that was great having him out there with me too.
Fred Warner joining me for a few more moments. And then you had Richard Sherman making that huge INT in the second half. I mean, Fred, in full transparency, I'm fascinated by the guy. I love Richard Sherman. What's it like, though, to have this guy in that locker room and then there on the back end and still making plays like he does on a big stage?
Yeah, I mean, Rich is one of the best to ever do it, for sure. I mean, he shows up in big games. He's talked about it, you know, ever since the game ended. But, you know, he can because he constantly puts it on tape and proves himself. And, I always look up to him about just the what he's in the way, you know, he works day in and day out. And, I mean, the guy, everybody looks at this guy when it comes to, you know, the getting in those big moments. He's been there. He's done all of this before, and he's been at the pinnacle. So, you know, we're going to continue to lean on Sherm, and I know he's gonna show up every single day.
All right, so before I let you go, let me get your quick thoughts on the game. You've got Green Bay coming in on Sunday. You had that huge game against the Packers back in November with 11 tackles, and you had a strip sack of Aaron Rodgers. What are you able to take away from that game that you can apply to this game?
I think we really got off to a fast start. You mentioned that strip sack. I think that's what got us up front pretty quickly. You know, I got us that confidence, and the offense was doing really well that game. You know, I feel like as a defense as a whole, we were all flying around. We came out with a swag that game for sure. And I think it'll be a much different game this time around. You know, Green Bay is hot right now. I know they're going to come out with a little, a little vengeance on their mind just because of how that game went the first time. So we know that we're going to have to work even harder than we did last week if we want the result that we want.
All right, so one last question. The team went 4-12 last year. And now you're hosting the NFC Championship game. I know there were injuries last season, and people around the organization believe that this group was close to turning the corner. But you were 4-12 last year. I mean, how do you put into words the difference between last season and this one?
Yeah, it's actually kind of hard to put into words. I've thought about it here and there, the fact that we've made such a huge jump, but it's just a testament to the type of people we have in this building. You know, the team that Coach Shanahan and Mr. Lynch have put together. Just the love that these guys, that all of us have for each other is crazy. And I think that's what's kind of showing on the field and on tape. And I feel like that's the result from why we've been able to, have such a dramatic change from last season to this season.
Right. So to that point, quick follow, chemistry. Like, what comes first? Is there chemistry which leads to winning, or do you have good chemistry after you start to win?
Oh, for sure. You have to have chemistry before you start winning, no doubt. You know, if the chemistry is a product of the winning, I feel like it's not true chemistry. You're basically only you only like each other if things are going well. But I think that's what is different about us. When everything was hitting the fan last year, or just in the prior years, everybody stuck together. Nobody pointed fingers. You know, and I feel like that's what's the biggest difference in our team.
I've even got one to contribute. My beef is with the teenagers who are working at the local juice bar. No names mentioned. Nectar. So I go in there the other morning. I've had a workout. I'm going to get to my old trapper a little bit later on. But lately, I've got people telling me about how great celery juice is. Best thing ever. You know, on and on and on and on. So I started to smash it. So I go in there early, so early that there's nobody in line. And I don't ask them to prepare me anything. I just grab a couple of bottles. One vegan protein shake and one celery juice. Things, Ike, that you will never know about. I put them on the counter. This 16-year-old who's doing her prep work looks at me and says, be right with you. I'm like, sure. And I sit there and I wait. And she's doing whatever it is she's doing back there. And again, this is early in the morning, really early in the morning. There's nobody else there in line. And she's just doing her thing, just prepping up. I've been there 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. You know, I got to be honest with you. I'm not a real big person in that I couldn't say, excuse me, can I please just pay for these so I can go? Man, I was like just steaming. And I was getting more and more pissed. And then like a really mature middle-aged guy, looking at a 16-year-old who said she'd be right with me when she was doing nothing other than prepping whatever the hell she was prepping, I turn around and I walk out. But I left the bottles on the counter to make my point. And now I'm pissed because I made kind of a scene. Like, I didn't say anything. I just turned around and walked out. But they know. They know I live around there. I made enough of a scene that I don't want to go back in there, which is too bad because I kind of like the place and I kind of like the product. Now I'm pissed because that 16-year-old said she'd get to me and hung me out for 5 minutes and was just messing with me. Hey, prep star, just come around the counter, take my $20 for your two bottles so I can come back tomorrow and run it back again. That's my beef. My beef is I was trying to buy a vegan protein shake and celery water, which, by the way, tastes like ass, all right? Just sell it to me. You know, I'm not saying this for effect. I mean this sincerely. Almost everybody I know now has trouble sleeping. Do you fit into that? Are racing thoughts overtaking your night of sleep? Are you tired of not being able to sleep? Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? If so, it's time for you to try Ebb. If you've tried everything from pills to pillows with little success, it is time for you to try Ebb. Ebb comfortably cools your forehead, and it helps to quiet the racing mind, and it promotes the natural onset of sleep. Ebb is the first and only wearable, drug-free solution that targets the root cause of sleeplessness, the racing thoughts. Ebb applies precise and continuous cooling to the forehead, which calms your mind. Plus, it's clinically validated, and 4 out of 5 users report falling asleep faster and improving overall sleep quality. Ebb Sleep is a wearable solution that fits over the forehead and gently and precisely cools the forehead to reduce those racing thoughts, and it allows people who are suffering from sleeplessness to drift more comfortably into a deeper, more restorative sleep. And Ebb Sleep is designed to work with your natural sleep-wake rhythms to allow you to get into that deep sleep more quickly. This is a real issue. Many people I know have trouble sleeping. You want to have the energy to do the things that you love again, and you need to get the sleep in order to do them. Ebb's natural solution has no morning side effects and allows you to get back to your peak performance. And right now, you can try Ebb, risk-free, for 60 nights to confirm that it is the solution you have been looking for. Go to tryebb.com/Rome. That's tryebb.com/Rome. Again, tryebb.com/Rome. Order today and get the sleep you need and deserve. He is Dennis Dodd. Dennis, good to have you. How are you?
Tim, I am great. We'll have to have a meet and greet at the game. I'm covering the AFC Championship game, so look forward to it.
Oh, I love that. That's great news. All right, Dennis Dodd joining us. All right, Dennis, before the game last night, you had 5 keys for Clemson to win the national title. The first key was Clemson D coordinator Brent Venables scheming up something special to confuse and limit Joe Burrow. Knowing that, what did you think of how Clemson's defense started that game?
You know, it's exactly how it played out. I'm not going to toot my own horn, but Brent Venables, who's a genius and probably the best play-calling defensive coordinator in the country, came out in a 3-man set, 3-down line, then sometimes 2, and just brought blitzes and rushes from everywhere, zombie blitzes, dropping 8, dropping 9, rushing 6, rushing 7, And there was a moment after the game where Joe Burrow said, I still haven't figured out where the blitzes were coming from. Mm. And that's exactly what happened. Until the second quarter, they kind of figured it out. The Clemson was up 17-7. And one of the biggest, I guess, offensive blitzes I've seen this season. Three scoring drives totaling 15 plays, 232 yards, in a total, Jim, of 5 minutes and 8 seconds. And you look up and it's 28-17. That's a microcosm of what LSU was this year.
Dennis Dodd joining us. Listen, you've covered this sport, college football, for a long, long time. You've seen a lot of great players. What were you thinking as you watched Burrow put up those numbers that you just referenced against a really good Clemson defense last night?
Just that you have to see him live to appreciate him. I kept saying this throughout the season. Until I saw him live at Alabama in that game, you can't appreciate the moxie, the accuracy, the arm strength, the leadership, the running ability, which was huge. 521 total yards last night. Think about this progression in the BCS era. The total offense record in the championship game has progressed from Vince Young to Deshaun Watson to Joe Burrow to last night. Five touchdown passes to set the modern record, well, not the modern record, the all-time record, 60 in a season. One of my favorite stats from last night, he averaged one touchdown pass per quarter this season. Hmm. 15 games, four quarters at 60.
I mean, Dennis, it's one thing to call it a historic season, it's that, but the numbers themselves, it's almost impossible to even wrap your head around these numbers. How do you explain the fact that he was able to do it, not just last night, but over the course of the season against every kind of defense imaginable and every defense he faced?
I think it's generational. I can't explain. You have to talk about Ed Orgeron deciding on his own, we have to get more progressive in the offense and go to the spread RPO thing. Identifying Joe Brady, this 29-year-old offensive assistant, not even a position coach, who told me on media day he did everything in the office, including cut up film, and all of a sudden he's a play caller, at least a passing game coordinator and receivers coach at LSU. He installed the offense, had a profound effect. And then you get this transfer quarterback, who was a five-star coming out of high school. I think it's from 39 career passes or something like that in Ohio State. And he absolutely lights it up with what we now have to consider is, you know, best season, best player, you know, best offense. This guy might be the best player, best single season of all time in college football.
I don't think there's any doubt. Dennis Dodd is joining us now. Now, Dennis, it wasn't just Burrow. LSU's defense did a really good job of making life tough on Trevor Lawrence. And as the game wore on, it got worse. What did you make of Lawrence's performance overall?
I thought it was, like you just said, I think it wore on him. That LSU defense with Grant Delpit, those rushers up front, Derek Stingley, who was a magnificent freshman, at corner this year, as it became obvious that he had the pass. And he was off. I mean, it really looks strange to see Trevor Lawrence 18 out of 37, below 50%. But that's what it was. And he was, you know, after the game, here's a guy who hasn't lost since high school, 25-0 as a starter, 29 wins in a row for Clemson. He was crestfallen. I mean, I guess he should be, but it really affected him. And it's almost a shame, Jim, that with what he's accomplished, he has this quote-unquote burden of having to come back and play college football for another year when it's clear he could be succeeding in the NFL at a high level right now.
We were talking to Dennis Dodd. Now, there's no doubt. I mean, he was crestfallen, and it's going to be pretty curious. Look, the guy's coming back. The guy is definitely going to come back. I don't think that's a big mark against. And when I say coming back, Dennis, I mean, he's going to be fine. He's still a great, great talent. He ran to a really good defense. Now, we're talking about an LSU team, Dennis, that lost to Troy 2 years ago, and now they're the national champs. Now, that was a good Troy team, but at the same time, if I had told you after they lost to Troy 2 years ago that they'd win a national championship, what would you have said to me?
Well, I would have said it's impossible. That's a benchmark for me because I just flew from Virginia Tech for a game on a Saturday to LSU on a Monday because I said, I've got a chronicle there. I don't know if he's going to make it through the week, talking about Orgeron. And I'm serious. That's how loud the tom-toms were rumbling in Baton Rouge at that point. And I got there for his presser on Monday at noon. And Jim, I've been to happier funerals. You know, stiff upper lip and everything. You can't lose Detroit at home. Well, since then, you know, we've detailed what they've done. But 32-5, Ed Orgeron proved himself to be what nobody thought he was, an elite head coach. You know, great recruiter, great defensive line coach, you know, funny accent, everything else, can have a nice career. But that was another thing. You got to talk about that being one of the single season best coaching jobs in history as well last night.
Oh, no doubt. So on that point, not only did they win the national title 2 years after losing to Troy, they beat six top 10 teams, all four of the teams in the AP preseason top 25. So, Dennis, there's a temptation to become kind of the prisoner of the moment. But when you look at the teams they beat and how badly they beat them, how strong is the case for them to be regarded as the greatest team ever?
Well, I don't think there's any question right now. When you talk about 15-0, the only other team to do that in the modern era ever is Clemson, and that was last year. Jim, the only other team to win more most recently was the University of Chicago in 1899. They won 16 and beat four high school teams. So that ought to put it in perspective. LSU has beaten three top 10 teams since December 8th. The Nebraska team of 71, somebody brought that up, you know, as a comparison. The Nebraska team of 71 under Tom Osborne, I think his first year, and maybe Bob Devaney, they won three top 10 teams all season. I don't know if this has ever been done.
And again, it's kind of curious, right, that they drop that story when they drop that story, because notice I haven't even gotten to it, and we're in hour number three. A bombshell. Major League Baseball announced Major League discipline on the Astros after finding out the team did use technology to cheat during the 2017 season. GM Jeff Luhnow, manager A.J. Hinch, suspended by Major League Baseball for a year. And also Major League Baseball announced that the team would be fined $5 million and would lose first and second round picks in this and next year's drafts. Now, the fine is walk-around money for a sports team. The lost draft picks are bad, but they're not brutal. But the suspensions to the GM, the manager, are serious. Hinch's suspension is the longest in baseball history since Pete Rose. That's how serious. And then the reaction from that news was still pouring in. As it was, owner Jim Crane did not wait. He announced that Luhnow and Hinch both had been fired. Even as reaction was coming in, he fired both. So one bombshell after another. Now let me say a couple of things about A.J. Hinch. I've always liked having A.J. Hinch on this show. A.J. Hinch is a great guest. The conversations with A.J. Hinch are always great. A.J. Hinch is a great manager. I like A.J. Hinch. I like A.J. Hinch a lot. That's my first point. Period. He's a great manager. I like him a lot. My second point. The Astros had to move on from A.J. Hinch and Luhnow. They had to do that. Now, we can get into whether or not those are the right two guys to pay the price. But if Major League Baseball is saying that they're suspended for the year for their role in that cheating scandal, you can't have an interim GM and a manager for 1 year and then bring these guys back in 2021. That doesn't work. I mean, that would just be too weird and too awkward, and it wouldn't work.
Awkward.
But it does not make the fact that they're gone any less shocking, or the timing of this any less weird, because it's almost like MLB came out with the news the day after the NFL playoffs and the day of the college football national title. And it's probably not a coinkydink. If I were a conspiracy theorist, I would suggest that they want to get this out there and then have it go away. Because on any other day, that would be the biggest story of the day, and it would carry the day, if not the entire week. Myself, again, I didn't even get to it to hour number three, and not because I was avoiding it. Now it's almost kind of like an afterthought that the team was found to have been using video technology to crack the code on pitches being signaled and then banging a trash can to alert the batter to certain pitches. But still, the fact that the GM and the manager of the Astros were the ones who got run is shocking. Don't get me wrong. Cheating is not shocking. It's not shocking at all. It goes back for years. One of the first things I ever said on this show, and I did not make this up, it's a famous, famous saying. It's an old saying. If you're not cheating, you're not trying, and so on cheating if you get caught. So this is not shocking. there's a rich history of cheating. It goes back years. It involves mascots, phones, lights, walkie-talkies, Apple Watches, and just about every team at one point or another. So there's a ton to unpack here. I mean, way too much for only one segment. Way too much for even one show. This is going to carry on for a while longer. But let's consider this a start. So while the use of video monitors might be new, it's an evolution, not a revolution. According to SI, various Astros personnel told MLB investigators about eight other teams who were using tech to steal signs in 2017-2018. For instance, in August of 2017, the Red Sox won 2 out of 3 games in a series against the Yankees at Fenway. Shortly thereafter, they were busted for using a TV monitor, an Apple Watch, and a series of signals to communicate signs. MLB fined the Red Sox, who also accused the Yankees of doing something similar the previous year. The Yankees were fined as well. So at that point in September of 2017, Commissioner Rob Manfred told teams, just stop. Knock it off.
Knock it off!
Don't cheat.
You all right?
He issued a statement telling everybody, stop doing it or you risk serious punishment. We mean business. 6 days after the warning from Manfred, the Astros, or the Houston Asterisks, as some of you have glossed them already, use the trash can in a game against the White Sox. So at that point, it's a serious problem. Everybody had been told, don't do it. Stop doing it. We know what's going on. And they went ahead and they did it anyway. And then according to MLB's investigation, they used their replay room and video monitor improperly, quote, throughout the postseason. A postseason that ended with them beating the Dodgers in the World Series. And for the record, Luno and Hinch aren't the only people who are going to be punished. The Astros are not the only team that will be punished. The Red Sox are being investigated. And the expectation is manager Alex Cora, who is a bench coach with the Astros, might face an even stiffer punishment than Luno and Hinch. The question is, does the punishment fit the crime, and did the right people get punished? It's kind of tricky, right? Because the commissioner's report makes it clear that Houston's operation was set up by Cora and the players, including new Mets manager Carlos Beltran. This is kind of long, but let me read this excerpt really quickly. Quote, approximately 2 months into the 2017 season, a group of players, including Carlos Beltran, discussed that the team could improve on decoding opposing team signs and communicating the signs to the batter. Cora arranged for a video room technician to install a monitor displaying the center field camera feed immediately outside of the Astros dugout. The center field camera was primarily used for player development purposes and was allowed under MLB rules at the time when used for that purpose. Witnesses have provided largely consistent accounts of how the monitor was utilized. One or more players watched the live feed of the center field camera on the monitor. And after decoding the sign, a player would bang a nearby trash can with a bat to communicate the upcoming pitch to the batter. Witnesses explained that they initially experimented with communicating sign information by clapping, whistling, or yelling, but they eventually determined that banging a trash can was the preferred method of communication. Players occasionally also used a massage gun to bang the trash can. Generally, one or two bangs corresponded to certain off-speed pitches, while no bang corresponded to a fastball. Witnesses consistently described this new scheme as player-driven. And with the exception of Cora, non-player staff, including individuals in the video replay review room, had no involvement in the banging scheme. End quote. So, it was player-driven, and Hinch was not directly involved. Not only was he not involved, he physically damaged the monitor on 2 different occasions to let everybody know he was not okay with it. And now he's suspended for 1 year and he's fired. Now, this is not to defend AJ Hinch. As Hinch said in his statement, he did not participate in it, but he failed to stop it. And now he's paying a price, a steep price. But to me, it's a little weird that the guys who were actively involved, the players, do not appear to be paying any price right now. And they may never pay a price. There could be a lot of reasons for that. Maybe Manfred hadn't made it clear that the people in authority were the ones who'd get punished. And number two, maybe no players named names. Maybe there were too many players to name and discipline. Either way, it just seems kind of weird that the guys doing the cheating were not punished yesterday and probably won't be punished in the future. Here's something else that's not going to happen. They're not going to strip the Astros of that world championship and just give it to the Dodgers. Nor are they going to rip the Red Sox of theirs and just give it to the Dodgers. Just like nobody stripped any PED user of their numbers. That's not how it works. Which kind of sucks. Dodger fan, you're going to have to live with that. But it kind of sucks. I've always said saying something sucks is not a take. But if you're a Dodger fan, that sucks. Again, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And it's only cheating if you get caught. Well, they were caught. You know, so if you want to come up in here and say, yeah, well, hey, Rome, everybody does it. One, I don't know that everybody does it. I know others are doing it. I don't know how prevalent it is. Safe to assume others are doing it. But these were the guys who get caught. They got caught. He is Lorenzo Alexander. Lorenzo, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How you doing, brother?
No, I'm great. Really nice to have you back. So you made your retirement official after the playoff game in Houston. First things first, how is retired life treating you so far?
You know what, it's going great, and really not too much has changed because this is like my normal routine after the season's over in general. You know, there's not a lot going on, and so I probably won't feel the effects until probably April or training camp when guys are reporting, and I'm sitting at home with the family doing our thing, playing daddy.
That's great. Lorenzo Alexander joining us. You know, you and I have talked about your journey in the past, but again, you were drafted in 2005 out of Cal. You had to battle for everything you had in the NFL. There was a time when you were getting cut by the Panthers and the Ravens, and you thought that if things did not work out in Washington, you'd probably go to law school. So right. If I told you, Lorenzo, you'd spend 15 years in the NFL, what would you have said?
No way. I mean, obviously, my career started. I was just trying to make it to the next day. And, you know, thankfully I've come in counter with a ton of teammates, you know, from London Fletcher, Larry Fitzgerald, Kyle Williams, Mike Sellers, and many others, as well as coaches like Danny Smith, that have really helped me grow as a player, poured into me and helped me show me the way how to be a professional. And I was able to take advantage of it and create, you know, a long and productive career and, you know, found my niche throughout that time.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us. Now, let's be real clear about those days in Washington because they were challenging. As you wrote in the Players Tribune a couple of years back, those practices were Joe Gibbs practices.
Yeah.
What were they like, and what kind of a toll did they take on you physically?
Yeah, I probably could have got two more years if I didn't have Joe Gibbs. And, you know, obviously, Joe Gibbs is one of the greatest coaches ever, Hall of Fame caliber. But, you know, before this new CBA, I mean, you know, padded practices, there was really no rain on them as far as how many we could have. So you had the double days in training camp. You had Wednesday, Thursday, Friday during the season. As a young player, a practice squad player trying to make the team, especially during the season, I took every single rep possible. Look team offense, look team defense, special teams, and I never left the field. And that was probably one of the most physically grueling times of my life. I mean, I remember times trying to get home and get up the stairs of my apartment, and I literally had to crawl up the stairs just because how sore I was. I didn't know how to take care of my body. And so it was definitely challenging times, but I think it definitely hardened me and gave me appreciation for taking care of your body. And then when I had the opportunity this year to take a Wednesday off and get up breath, but it was part of the plan, built a great foundation and allowed me to play the way I did as well, I believe.
Lorenzo Alexander is joining us. So not only were you in the league for a decade and a half, but you did just about everything there is to do in the game. How does it feel then to be walking out on your own terms, walking away from the game on your own terms?
Right. You know, it's a great feeling. I mean, obviously not too many guys get that opportunity to do it. They're either told you're not good enough, you cost too much, you know, you're injury prone. And so for me to really walk away and really choose my family, you know, because I still love this game, would still love to play. But at this point in my career where I have to do so much just to get ready to get ready, you know, as far as the massages, dry needling, the stretching, all that stuff has almost become another job in a sense to prepare. And it's taken a lot of time away from my family and really surprised, really shifted my priorities in a sense. You know, I'm a man that believes faith, family, and football. And the older I've gotten, football has really almost either came equal or leapfrogged my family life in so many ways. And so that's why I've been so blessed to have a great wife. Imagineika has done a great job of holding our household down, raising our kids, and really supporting me throughout these last 12 years of our marriage. And, you know, she's been really a blessing. It's really allowed me to extend my career on the back end.
We are talking to Lorenzo Alexander. I'm so glad you laid that out like that, that whole notion of you had to get ready in order to get ready. I mean, that really tells me quite a bit. I mean, is that essentially how you knew it was time? For instance, you said you've been thinking about this for a while, and midway through the season, you felt like it was time. I'm always curious, how do you know when it's time? Like, how did you know it was time?
Well, for me, I mean, it just got to the point, because I'm a guy, you know, obviously everybody in the NFL is talented, but I'm not a guy that's on the top end of the athletic spectrum. So I'm a guy that has to practice, lift weights, get all my reps in order so I can go out and compete at the highest level and be productive and help my teammates. And really towards, you know, this year, it's really been going in the last two seasons where I'll have Wednesday off. But towards the end of this year, I would have to take Wednesday and Thursday off just to feel okay to go practice on Friday and feel okay to go play in the game. And I felt like I, you know, just wasn't giving or being able to produce my best ball practicing that way. You know, being able to have certain reads and making certain plays. And I still was productive, but it wasn't to my standard of my mind. And, you know, especially that practice aspect, you know, being a blue-collar guy, being a leader about how to go about doing things. And my body just, you know, told me, no, you can't do it. I had to listen so I could still play this season. But that's not how I want to lead this team, nor go out there and play. And so, you know, couple that with wanting to be with my family, I was at peace with making the decision to be able to walk away.
That makes so much sense. Lorenzo Alexander joining me. I'm glad you mentioned leadership. I was going to go there next because over the last few years, one Bills player after another has talked about the culture in that locker room, and you're a big part of that culture. How much pride, Lorenzo, do you take in playing such a significant role in the culture change with the Bills and getting to the playoffs twice in the last three seasons after such a long drought?
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a pleasure. You know, obviously the foundation was laid with Kyle Williams, and I just came in and supplemented a lot of things he was doing, and Sean and Brandon started bringing in cultured guys that, you know, were great people, could play ball, and were open to listen to a veteran like myself speaking to their lives. And so just to be able to help, you know, guys like a Micah Hyde or a Jordan Poyer or young guys like Tremaine Edmonds or Josh Allen maybe see the world and this league a little bit differently, you know, maybe speak some life into, you know, how to be a husband, how to be a father, you know, how to be a pro. Has helped them grow a little bit quicker, to help this team obviously win on game days, but to really be an impact in their lives and their families has really been a joy of my last 4 years. And I think I'll say that was highlighted by being able to baptize a couple of my teammates, some coaches as well, as well as their wives. So just to be a part of a family, you know, way bigger than football and team, but being a part of their family, going into their homes, is something that I will remember and take with me forever. And that's why it's always hard to leave. It's not about the game. It's really about the people and the relationship that you have developed over the time.
Lorenzo Alexander is my guest. I mean, so clearly you were a mentor to so many guys early in your career then. Early in your career, who were some of the guys who mentored you?
Well, we had when I was in Carolina, I had guys like Dan Morgan, who's actually part of our scouting department here now, and Brenton Buckner, who I actually played with in Carolina as a rookie, but also was a coach of mine in Arizona. It just shows you how small this league is. Those guys early on in my career, I watched how they worked. You know, I spent 4 days in Baltimore. So I saw Ray Lewis, you know, obviously a Hall of Famer, you know, premier linebacker at the time. And he was the first one in, you know, first one in, last one to leave. I mean, he lived that life. And so I saw how he worked, saw how London Fletcher worked. We built a great brother relationship while I was in Washington. And I would say those people really helped define what it meant to be a pro and what it meant to play this game at a high level. And then I would say off the field, guys like Antoine Randall, James Thrash, Ronaldo Wynn, Kendrick Golson showed me how to be a man and what it looked like to be a father, a Christian father, and play in this world of NFL football and live the life of a Christian and what that looked like and doing it boldly and doing it respectfully and leading guys that way. And so I was very blessed, as I mentioned, for a lot of guys that helped me in so many different aspects of my life. And I'm just so fortunate to have those relationships and still to this day. And so those guys have helped me, and I'm, you know, definitely blessed.
Talking to Lorenzo Alexander, I so appreciate this conversation. Before I let you go, clearly you're about so much more than just football. But one thought about football, one of the things you've talked about is an interest in player development and maybe doing some work in that area. What is it about player development that excites you the most?
You know, it's just helping young men become men. You know, oftentimes we have a lot of guys that come into our league that have come from adverse backgrounds like myself, you know, single parent household, growing up in the inner city. You have this great talent, and oftentimes people push you along and don't really get the correction and the wisdom and the guidance you need to become a man. As I see it, you know, being accountable, being a great father, a great husband, being reliable, all some of those things that we kind of just push by certain guys because they're talented. So to be able to be hopefully be a part of the Buffalo Bills player development as we move forward, you know, I have a role with the NFLPA, but continue to build those intimate relationships with some of the young guys on our team and help them grow up and leave some of their boys' tendencies behind is obviously going to help them impact their lives, impact their families, legacy-type stuff that we talk about, and some of the byproducts of that is then when you come to work, you're more focused, you're more engaged, and you're going to be more productive when you touch the football field because your life is in order. And so if I can be a part of that, especially here in this organization, would be definitely a dream and a passion and why, I think really is my passion in life.
You want to get help. You want to help folks get squared away. So finally, on that note, now that your job, anybody playing in the NFL, it's such a demanding job. You've got to make so many sacrifices. Now that that side or that thing is maybe over to the side a little bit, how eager are you to spend time with your family, with your wife, with your kids?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you sacrifice so much, as I kind of mentioned earlier in the interview, as far as, you know, getting ready to get ready. And your family gets a lot of that neglect as far as not being able to show up to all the basketball games and not be able to take trips. And when we do, I got to figure out, you know, where I'm going to train at, where I'm going to work out, who's going to give me a massage. So I just can't wait to be fully present in all their activities, all our trips, and not really have to worry about preparing to play a game, that obviously I love. And so that's what I look most forward to this offseason. We have some trips planned, getting together with family, some former teammates going there, you know, obviously down to Louisiana to visit Kyle, up to Montana to visit an old teammate of mine that played in Philly, Cole Anderson, and here in Buffalo. So I'm looking forward to doing all that, not having to worry about where I'm going to work out at, who's going to do a massage while I'm on this trip.
I do love Montana. One last thought. I mentioned all the numbers, the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominees in 2017, 18, and 19. I want to acknowledge one more thing that I think you should be really proud of. I'm sure you are. You went to Cal. You and I are both UC guys. I went to UC Santa Barbara. You went to UC Berkeley. That is such an amazing academic institution. What was it like to go to college there and play football there?
I enjoyed it. Obviously, it was close to home. My parents could always come up. Friends and family could come watch me play. But, you know, honestly, when I first got there, it was much like the Buffalo situation. We hadn't been good in a long time. My first year there, we were, 1-10 or something like that. By the time I left there, we had brought in a lot of great athletes from Aaron Rodgers to Brandon Meebane to Marshawn Lynch, and we finished number 5. So to be a part of that culture change with Jed Tepfer leading us was really cool. And then also just to be on that campus with all the best minds and, a kind of a melting pot of the minds around the country of kids that have gone on and done great things. It was really cool to kind of rub shoulders with them and get to see how they saw the world and, you know, whether it was politics, religion, just having those great conversations to make you open and open your mind outside of, for me, you know, Oakland, California, where I really didn't live, really didn't leave from being a kid until I got to college. And so it was really cool to get those different perspectives and have some great relationships still to the day that, you know, were non-student athletes, but just, you know, students going up there getting their education, which was really cool to be a part of.
Lorenzo Alexander, a 2-time Pro Bowler, a Pro Bowl MVP, and he's calling it a day. But listen, I so appreciate you. I so appreciate the conversations over the years. Let's make sure, Lorenzo, this is not the last time we do this. I would love to have you back on soon.
You know, most definitely. You know, hopefully I can kind of venture my way into your world and learn that business and learn that skill set and be your colleague one of these days.
Well, man, I'm here for it. Anything you need from me, you let me know. I'm here for it.
I appreciate that.
Good night now!